Welcome back to Word on the Hills with me, Felicity Sitnell-Reed, and my co-host, Gwyn Sheltimer, as we bring you a holiday edition of Word on the Hills. Our next guest is Ronald Mackay. Thank you for coming on the programme, Ron. Ron is the author of a fascinating memoir, A Scotsman Abroad, focused on the period of his life when he taught linguistics at Bucharest University in Romania. He has also recently completed a new memoir, Fortunate Isle, about his year in Tenerife. Ron, tell us a bit about the story you're going to read.
The story I'm going to read was not included in the Fortunate Isle book that has just been published. We had to cut out something like 50,000 words from my original manuscript, but I'm delighted to have the opportunity to read it to you now. The full story would be called My Papa Invites Angels. By way of background, Laurita, a four-year-old child, had whispered to me as I passed her isolated cottage, "My papa invites angels. You too are invited." Her father, Miguel, a day laborer in the banana plantations where I also worked, overheard his daughter and confirmed I was invited for Christmas Eve. So here we go. Miguel and Laurita were seated outside when I reached their crude cottage. Elena, Miguel's wife, emerged from the dark interior, self-consciously plump, in the open doorway. All three wore their Sunday best. Laurita whispered, "He's come. Like us, he wants to meet the angels." I still had no idea what was in store. Graven images were distinctly absent from my dour Presbyterian devotions. Even the fractured beauty of stained glass was suspect. "We live modestly," Miguel said. Carrying the stools, he invited me to follow the family inside. It was the first home I'd entered since arriving in the Canary Islands months earlier. "This is your house," Elena offered. Other than a low table and two makeshift beds, the room was devoid of furniture. Cooking and washing were conducted outside. The walls were rough-cut cinder blocks from the quarry. The Milky Way's countless millions of stars were framed in the open doorway. On a narrow shelf, two candles burned beneath a page that had been torn carefully from a magazine. My eyes were drawn to it because the candlelight gave it salience. "Oh, the Virgin Mary." My plain Protestantism had few words for religious emblems. "Nuestra Señora de los Remedios," Elena expanded. "With the baby Jesus," Laurita whispered. "It was she who liberated our country from the Moors," Elena said. "It took 700 years." I regarded Nuestra Señora with greater respect. She calmly returned my gaze from a more heavenly region. I gestured to a third unlit candle. "That's our request," Laurita whispered. Her parents exchanged private smiles. "After the angels arrive, Papa will pray." "Please, sit," Miguel gestured to one of the stools. Laurita whispered, "Rice pudding with condensed milk." The four of us ate super-sweet rice pudding from small glass bowls beneath the smile of the baby Jesus. Our arms made exaggerated shadows on the unfinished walls. When we'd finished, Miguel, with a meaningful glance at his daughter, took a wooden tray and went out into the starlight. "Papa will now invite the angels to come in." Laura's eyes glistened. There were three sharp raps at the door. "Enter," Laurita called. Miguel entered, two angels bowing on his tray. Their bodies, 6 inch high, were inclined forward in respect. They were cut from the woody stalk of green retama, a kind of broom. Twisted round their heads were halos of coloured paper, and they wore kilts of the same material. Their wings were cut to shape from the delicate filigree tips of the same plant, but dried, and had been inserted into their shoulders so convincingly that they appeared poised to take off. Laurita gently took an angel in each hand, and Miguel lifted her so she could place one on either side of Nuestra Señora. Done, Laurita came and sat by me. Now, in perfect unison, Elena lifted one candle, Miguel the other, and held their flames under the angel's extended wings. The delicate dried fronds flared up, then died just as swiftly, leaving only glowing embers. Two puffs of gentle smoke drifted across Nuestra Señora's face. It cleared, and sweetness filled the air. Laurita watched, entranced. Now there were two wingless figures bowing on either side of the Virgin and Child. "Tell our guests what has occurred, Laurita." "The angels look like ordinary people now," Laurita explained. "You might pass them on the path without knowing they were angels. That's why we have to show respect. Anyone you meet could be an angel who has sacrificed her wings to remain here with us." With Laurita and her parents, I sat contemplating the picture torn from a magazine, but now I knew it for what it was, an icon inspired by unadulterated faith. "Now my papa will light the request," Laurita whispered. Miguel lit the third candle. All three bowed their heads. I too. "Our Father," Miguel asked simply, "give us the capacity we need for the burdens ahead. Amen." As I walked back under the stars, I humbly marveled at the true believer who asks not for favors or fortune, property or plenty, but only for the capacities necessary to work hard, live patiently, give birth safely, and to love and respect. Laurita's papa indeed invites angels into their lives.
Thank you, Ron. That was a lovely story. Thank you.
Thank you.
And our last reader is none other than my co-host, Gwyn Scheltema. Gwyn is a poet, columnist, fiction and non-fiction writer, and professional editor. She's won several awards for her short stories, including the Toronto Star Short Story Contest, a Canadian Authors Association contest, and the Timothy Finley Creative Writing Award. Gwyn, I know a lot of your writing is influenced by the time you spent in Africa. Is the story you're going to read set there?
Actually, it is, and it's a true story. It's a story about my mother and a gardener that we had who came from Malawi, and we were living in Zimbabwe, so they were both strangers to that land. Anyway, it's called Mistletoe and Mushrooms. Mother was an avid gardener and a miracle worker. She grew the delicate freesias, daffodils, and columbine of her English homeland under the hot Zimbabwe sun. But if Mother was a miracle worker, Solomon was her resident angel. Solomon came from the far north, so they were both kindred spirits, both displaced, and both with a strange, almost eerie affinity for nature. Solomon taught my mother how to grow native plants and often brought her gifts from the bush. He appeared at the kitchen door with freshly picked mushrooms in a wooden bowl, large flat white ones with deep purple underbellies, small buttons with long stems and stubby toadstools of such brilliant colors they seemed to have been plucked from my storybooks. Phineas the cook twisted his apron in his hands and predicted a dire end for us all. My ware, those mushroom is poison, madam. You will die, oh, my ware." But Mother calmly thanked Solomon, took a small bowl, and picked out only the very best specimen of each kind. She took her time, examining them and making her choice. Sometimes she chose one, only to notice a better one, and return the first choice to the pile. Eventually, Mother returned the wooden bowl to Solomon. His brown eyes thanked her, and he disappeared to add the remaining mushrooms to his own supper. "I hope Solomon will be available to work tomorrow," Mother casually remarked to my father that evening. For her part, Mother taught Solomon a great deal, too. She taught him to make steaming piles of compost and trap slugs in bowls of beer. Solomon joked that he would like to be a slug. She taught him how to prune roses and graft fruit trees. If he ever wondered why Mother insisted on growing plants that belonged in another climate, he never questioned her. Instead, he wove intricate mats from long elephant grass, and in the heat of the day erected them like sun umbrellas over the seedlings. Most of all, they understood each other's needs. Mother understood those strange times when a man feels the pull of a greater force and cannot rest until it is served. Solomon took off about 3 times a year. He left without warning and sometimes did not return for several days, and on rare occasions, several weeks. He packed nothing and returned as suddenly as he had left, and without explanation, resumed his work. Despite my father's protests, Mother never docked his pay or questioned him. She had no need for questions. She already knew the answers. Solomon understood Mother's needs, too. One December, as Christmas approached, Mother sat in the shade of a purple bougainvillea and paged through an overseas magazine filled with Christmas pictures, holly, mistletoe, pine boughs, and red bows. Solomon worked nearby, and then without warning he downed tools and walked off into the bush. Mother watched him go, sighed, and resumed her reading. But about an hour later he returned, his upper body hidden by a mass of boughs, blue-green and spiky like blue spruce and junipers. With a grin he laid them at my mother's feet. Pointing to the magazine, he held out his hand. In it were sprigs of white berries in leathery yellow-green leaves, just like mistletoe. Sunlight filtered through the blossoms overhead and cast a spotlight on my mother as she held the sprigs above her head, laughed out loud, and danced under her Christmas mistletoe.
That was lovely. Lovely. Thank you. And to finish, I'd like to share this little poem with you. It says all that Gwen and I wish for you, our listeners, this season. We found it on the internet, and it's written by someone identified only as Maureen. It's called Christmas Gifts. The gifts I leave beneath your tree aren't those that you can touch or see, not wrapped in Christmas tissue gay, but gifts to bless you every day. The gift of friendship, warm and true, is one that I will leave for you. And when your heart has lost its song, the gift of hope to spur you on, and good health, happiness, and cheer to keep you smiling through the year. Well, that brings us to the end of our holiday edition of Word on the Hills. We hope you enjoyed it. If you'd like to listen to any of our programs again, you'll find them all archived at our website, wordonthehills.com. If you'd like to connect with us, please send comments, queries, or suggestions for who we might interview in future programs to the website, too. We love to hear from you and welcome your comments on our programs. And now, Gwen and I would like to wish you all the very best of the season and the new year. May your lives be filled with love and peace and joy. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you'll join us for another program next week on Sunday at 1 p.m., right here on Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.